From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of May 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, it seems the WTO may side against the United States cool or country of origin labeling legislation, and a group of senators from livestock-producing states wants to ban what they call unfair meatpacking practices. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then I'll update that prevent plant conversation we heard Monday from Gary Schnitke. We were looking at Central Illinois farms with 180 bushel to the acre APH. It's all different for farms with 150 or 160 APH. And as we close out our program, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly higher. Nearby July wheat at $7.96, up 16¾. The September up 17 at $8.45, and next year's July at $9.38, up 13 for the day. July corn futures 9 cents higher at $7.42¼ a bushel. September at $7.14¾, up 9¾, and December corn $6.70¾ up 80¼. The March at $6.81¾, 9 higher. May corn at $6.88¼, up 8½. July at $6.95¼, up 9¾. July soybeans $13.77, 4¾ higher today. The August at $13.73, up a nickel. September at $13.67, 6½ higher. And November beans at $13.61, up 6¾. January futures $13.69¾, up 7½ cents. Bean meal 90 cents lower. Bean oil up 48 cents on the day. CME Group live cattle finished the August at 105.22½, up $1.32½. The August feeders at $124.52½ per 100 pounds, $1.75 higher. And July lean hogs today at $87.40, up 47½ cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. July crude oil at $101.21 a barrel, up $1.62. Ethanol at 263 2/10 of a cent, 2 1/10 of a cent higher. Natural gas at 437 1/10, up 2 6/10. And heating oil at $2.97 7/10, up 6 7/10 of a cent. The gold futures at $1,526.60 an ounce, settled $3.40 higher. And the Dow now just about 40 points higher at 12,396. The U.S. dollar at 75.9, up 0.03. The CRB at 344.44 is up 5.34 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Showers and the thunderstorms. Some of the storms could be severe, of course, and produce heavy rainfall. The high of the day, 82 degrees, breezy, south winds at 18 to 20 miles an hour. The chance of precip in the area is set at 90%. Those showers and thunderstorms will continue tonight and will remain in the severe area. A low of 61 degrees, again, the chance of precipitation tonight at 90%. Tomorrow, showers and possibly a few thunderstorms, the high of 67. The chance of precip set at 80% in Urbana-Champaign. Thursday night, a chance of showers, that before 1 a.m., cloudy, a low of 48 degrees, and then Friday mostly cloudy, a high of 66 degrees, north-northwest winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour, but no showers or rainstorms in the forecast. And Friday night, they return, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, a low of 55 degrees. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms in 77. Sunday, mostly sunny, a high of 85 degrees. On Memorial Day, sunny, a high near 89, and on Tuesday, mostly sunny, the high near 90 degrees. More on the ag weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour and we talk with Drew Lerner.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Todd.
Well, is the Cooley estate still intact there and all the trees up and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, there's a lot of nervousness, of course, from our family of commodity traders. You know, some are finishing up, and I was surprised in Southern Illinois, maybe as much stuff getting done as there is, and there's certain windows of opportunity. But it does look like everybody in the state at some point in time in the next has or will get a pretty good shower, maybe some heavy rain in the Midwest. The private weather people, I talked to two different ones and one twice today. And the impression I got is that it does seem like it's a little kinder, gentler for the Ohio Valley after Memorial Day. It does look like the upper Midwest, the Dakotas, will continue to get beat upon. But it does seem like that there will be a lot of corn planted after Memorial Day, you know, and we'll chip away at that 19 million acres, so to speak.
Now, how many do you think that we'll get in the bag before we hit the prevent plant dates?
Well, that's a good question, and a couple of reasons why I think that's an unusual topic of conversation this year. Everybody figures the profitability of corn a little differently, and number two, there is this deal about if I went out and took crop insurance and sold 30 or 40% of my corn, and I'm 50 cents to a dollar behind, that might encourage me to go on and raise a crop of corn. A typical farmer doesn't like to write XYZ grain company a check for $25,000 or $50,000. Maybe they'll take the chance and try to raise the crop. Maybe the price of corn will be cheaper. You know, there's a lot of ifs and buts, and depends on the location of where you're, you know, maybe switching to soybeans or raising a crop of corn.
Let's deal with those producers that have a crop in the ground. It's there, maybe up, maybe not at this point, but the corn is there. What should they do, and what should they be thinking about as we look across this changing landscape at this point for the commodity markets?
Well, a couple of things. I really feel that the right answer is maybe 2 million acres less to 2.5 million acres less corn actually being planted versus the 92 million acres. That makes things a little more friendly. I do get the feeling that wheat is another supporting factor, with not as much spring wheat being harvested. And we also have a major weather problem with France being too dry. And so wheat is going to be a little more supportive. Instead of being a feed grain, I think it's going to become a commodity for export or for milling, and that takes a lot of the pressure from the feed grains away. We get the feeling that the cupboard is going to be basically bare, you know, as we go into harvest. And I think that, you know, the prudent persons here should be a little very careful on how he markets his grain. But I think if he has got 30 or 40% sold, I think I would wait for the potential of higher prices between now and the 4th of July.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too, Paul. Thank you so much. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. You can always listen to Paul again if you'd like to. He's on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. In just a few moments, Dave Dickey will be here with today's agricultural news.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
In agricultural news, media reports from the World Trade Organization headquarters in Geneva indicate that a WTO dispute panel has issued a preliminary ruling backing complaints filed by Canada and Mexico against mandatory U.S. country of origin labeling requirements for meats and perishable commodities. In a confidential interim report circulated last week to the parties, the three-member panel WTO reportedly accepted Canadian and Mexican arguments that U.S. cool requirements violated several provisions of the WTO's agreement on technical barriers to trade. The ruling had been anticipated for some time. The main question now is whether the U.S. will choose to appeal the decision. A group of senators representing four major livestock-producing states has introduced legislation that they say would ban unfair meat packer practices that negatively influence and impact independent ranchers and farmers. Their plan, if enacted, would be expected to supplant similar rules drafted by USDA's Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration, which have generated opposition among some segments of the U.S. livestock and meat industries. The bill would require livestock marketing agreements to have a firm base price derived from an external source, call for future forward contracts for livestock to be traded in public markets where buyers and sellers can witness bids and make their own offers, exempt producer-owned cooperatives, packers with low volumes, and packers who own only one processing plant, and guarantee that trading is done in quantities that provide market access for both small and large livestock producers. USDA Deputy Secretary Kathleen Merrigan says, get ready to accept USDA budget cuts and steps to make federal nutrition programs as efficient as possible. Yesterday, the House Appropriations Subcommittee for Agriculture laid out proposed cuts in agricultural and food programs for fiscal year 2012. Those include trimming $1.5 billion from child nutrition programs compared to last year's level, and a proposal to cut $832 million from the Women, Infants, and Children program. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Monday, you heard an interview I did with Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, on the prevent plant provisions of the crop insurance policies and what that might mean for farmers in southern Illinois, Ohio, and in the Dakotas. Well, we have an update on that, and it depends mostly on what your APH might be. Monday's interview, we were talking about Central Illinois farms at 180 bushels per acre APH, and there's a big difference between that and 150 bushels per acre APH, and just exactly what you might do with those prevent plant provisions of the crop insurance policies. We'll have all the details in a moment. This is a Farm Doc podcast. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Gary Schnitke, Farm Management Specialist in the College of ACES. Gary, thank you so much as an ag economist for coming down and talking to us a bit about the economics of prevent plant that is part of the crop insurance policies that many producers, most producers across the United States, will have taken for corn and soybeans, row crops in the Midwest. And we're now bumping up on some issues where they may need to look a little deeper into that crop insurance policy at the prevent plant provisions and figure out the economics of planting corn versus taking a payment out of the prevent plant. Tell me about it.
Yep. And again, those decisions are coming up. If corn hasn't been planted by the final plant date, which will vary across counties, but most counties in the Midwest and upper Midwest is either May 31st or June 5th. So when that date comes, farmers can take preventive planting and take a preventive planting payment, or they can plant corn. So at that point in time, the decision will be which will likely lead to the highest net returns, preventive planting or planting corn.
Now, most farmers will say, I'm going to plant corn if I can plant corn. But the economics of it say something different, especially given where most of the acreage has not yet been planted.
Yeah, that's correct. If we're looking at, southern Illinois, Ohio, Indiana, and upper Midwest, people have to take a good look at that, because preventive planting will, by a lot of calculations, yield more return than planting corn, particularly given that corn will have lower yields given that it's planted at this point in time.
APH something like
150s and 160s and below, preventive planting looks like an attractive alternative. What many farmers will be running up against this year as well is that in previous years or before 2008, they probably took lower coverage levels than they did this year. If preventive planting payments go up as you take higher coverage levels, so a 75% coverage level, 80% and 85% will have much higher preventive planting payments. So doing that, making those calculations will be critical.
Let's deal with the fertilizer cost first. So a producer has put nitrogen on. Does he put that into his calculation?
When we're comparing the returns between preventive planting and planting, what should be included in there is only the costs that have not yet been incurred. Because if we put, for example, nitrogen fertilizer on, that cost is sunk. So it doesn't matter whether we take the preventive planting payment or plant corn. It's no longer a relevant consideration. What that means is that if a person hasn't applied nitrogen fertilizer yet, it will make preventive planting look more attractive than an individual who hasn't.
But even so, if you're at 150, 160 APH, the economics still say
that the preventive planting payment looks like the alternative that will yield the highest net income at this point in time.
Give me some numbers.
All right, we looked at a situation where we took prices of $6.40 for harvest time price for corn, $13.30 for soybeans. Preventive planting payment net of cost at an 80% coverage level is running at $400 an acre. Planting corn net returns was coming out at $375 an acre. And planting soybeans was running $363 an acre. So at that 80% coverage level, taking the preventive planting payment was about $25 higher per acre than planting corn.
And for planting beans, it was better as well.
It was better as well. It was about $30 a higher. The way it looks to me this year, planting soybeans or taking preventive planting on corn, preventive planting on corn almost always looks better than planting soybeans. You have to get fairly high yields on soybeans to make it comparable. And just to give an example, on 80% coverage level, if you took preventive planting on that versus the soybean payment, you'd have to get 45 to 48 bushels of soybeans to be comparable to preventive plant, given a 150 bushel APH yield on corn.
So if we get to the June 5 timeframe, which is where most of the prevent plant provisions will show up, it's quite likely that if producers really start to think about it, they should just leave that land lay and take the prevent plant.
Yep, yep. Once the final planting date is here, prevent plant likely will be a attractive economic alternative. The thing to watch, we use $6.40 price for corn. If that goes up, planting corn looks better. If it goes down, taking the prevented planting payment will look better.
Now, it's important, because we're before those dates, to make note that a producer cannot make an economic decision today not to plant.
The crop provisions read that if you're going to, if you're able to plant corn, or field conditions are right to plant corn, you should plant corn up to the final planting date. And the final planting date, again, in most of these areas are May 31st and June 5th. Once those dates are reached, then prevent plant is an alternative.
Gary, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is a farm management specialist in the College of ACES. That's Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You can read more from him online at farmdoc.illinois.edu, and there will be calculators posted there as well, or visit farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers, because everything they do starts with you.
On this Wednesday afternoon, it's time to check in on the cash grain market, and we're joined now by Matt Kunisch, who's at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Afternoon.
Producer's been calling in and asking much about the cash grain market and basis over the last couple of days?
More basis than the actual futures market, but overall it's been extremely quiet around here.
When do you expect things to heat back up?
Well, in this area, you guys seem to be about, in the local area, about 80% done planting. You go north or south of us, it's a little less, probably 60-70%. But I still say in the next 2 to 3 weeks, it'll start heating back up again.
How do you answer those questions about basis?
As far as basis goes, coming in the summer, it's going to be a struggle to come across corn in June and July, and it feels for right now with ethanol margins that we can continue to pay these numbers 20-30s over if need be.
And where are you today? Where's your ethanol plant today on
20 over the July.
It is 20 over the July.
Yep.
And when will you switch out from July to, I don't know, whether you'll go to the September or December, but...
We do have a bid for August that follows the SEP. Depends on the spread how long we're going to keep it there, though.
All right. And so you think you'll have a tough time getting old crop corn. And once we get to the new crop, what do you see there?
As far as basis, I still think basis it has been creeping stronger here, especially with the weather in this area. Our draw area seems to be planted. It was a little later than what we wanted, but the northern draw area is later. So I think that continues to heat up, depending on which ethanol plants are the most aggressive, late September, early October.
And what are your bids for the day?
Delphi corn tonight at 760, Climbers corn 762, Ibet corn at 752, and Delphi beans at 1377.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you.
Matt Kunisch is with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Somebody from that office joins us each and every Wednesday on the Closing Market Report. Just a couple of minutes, I'll return, and we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated about the coming agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Wine Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1789, Anders Dahl died. A renowned Swedish botanist, the dahlia flower was named for him. The bushy perennial plant is native to Mexico, Central America, and Colombia. The Aztecs gathered and cultivated the plant for food, ceremony, as well as decorative purposes. In 1882, the first frozen mutton from New Zealand arrived in Britain. In 1986, about 7 million Americans participated in Hands Across America by holding hands and singing across 4,150 miles of road in support of the hungry and homeless. Participants paid $10 to reserve their place in line. The proceeds were donated to local charities. The longest unbroken part of the chain was allegedly in Illinois. And in 2007, Coca-Cola created a 3,000-gallon, 15-foot-high ice cream float with vanilla Coke and ice cream and set a new world record for the largest ice cream float in history. The float weighed in at 10 tons. A tanker from the Atlanta-based company's syrup plant pumped a non-carbonated mixture into a specially made 15-foot-high glass containing a device that carbonated the beverage. Workers dropped buckets full of ice cream into the top of the glass by hand. By the way, the float was certified as drinkable by health inspectors. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated is on the phone line. Drew, it's been a busy weather day in the Midwest today. Will it get easier as we go through time?
Well, yes and no. Certainly the severe weather that we're going to be dealing with for another day or so is going to be with us, obviously, for that period of time. But after that, we should see less severe weather and perhaps a little less rain as we move towards the first part of next week, which is so very important. I think we're all just about sick and tired of all the moisture around. And a nice little ridge of high pressure expected to build up across the Midwest as we go into the latter part of the weekend and into early next week. And that should clear out the skies. Most of the lower Midwest will see an extended period of drying take place. Temperatures get really warm. Unfortunately, you know, with all the moisture we've got out there, the humidity is going to get pretty high as we get into next week. So we get pretty uncomfortable out there. We may also get a little bit of instability, shower and thunderstorm activity to feed back as we try to pull some of this moisture out of the ground next week. So even though the forecast is talking about dry weather, don't be surprised to see a few instability showers pop up in the afternoon and kind of mess up everyone's plans. Before we get to that point, unfortunately, we still have a lot of rain coming up here for today and tomorrow. With rain just about everywhere across the Midwest. Moisture totals with this event are probably going to run anywhere from 3/4 of an inch to 1 3/4 inches, maybe a few areas to get more than 2 inches. And yes, we do expect some severe thunderstorms as well.
Talk to me, and I don't know whether you will have calculated this yet or not, about evaporation rates for those places that have not been able to put a crop in the ground and when you think they might be able to move tractors into the field.
You know, there's just not a lot of good drying time coming up. Initially, we are so wet in so many areas that and we'll have high humidity when we do finally get some sunshine out. I think we're probably going to be looking at 2 to 3 days in most cases for places like Michigan and Ohio. Some areas in those two states are so wet, it's going to take several days, actually, before they can dry down, even with temperatures getting up into the 80s at some point in time. And there's also a little potential for a couple of very weak little frontal boundaries to drift down through Michigan into Ohio during the middle of this ridginess that we're going to have. And that's going to aggravate things a little bit as well, produce a few sporadic showers and kind of interfere with that drying rate. So it's going to vary from county to county. My guess is that we probably won't see aggressive field work take place until we get into the second half of next week.
And then turn your attention to the rest of the planting and growing regions around the globe. What do you see that's a problem?
Oh, my. I don't know if we have enough time here. There is a lot of problems everywhere. Europe, China, and the former Soviet Union all are looking at some drier weather biases. We still have dryness in Western Australia as well. In Europe, the worst-case scenario is in France. France is really hurting for moisture, and most of Western Europe is also, but France seems to be in the worst shape, and we don't expect any relief there for at least a week. In China, most of east central China is going to see no rain for the next 7 days. There's already pockets that are quite dry over there. This is going to be a stressful period for China. There's even a second week of the two-week outlook that may not produce a lot of precipitation for some of that very same region. In western Australia, we're waiting for rain to fall. This is the 17th month of drought there. Wheat, barley, and canola planting is underway in a few areas, but they need a general soaking to take place to fix the situation. And finally, from Ukraine over to the lower Volga River Valley in the former Soviet Union is turning drier. Not a crisis today, but something to keep an eye on for about a week to 10 days from now.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That's the closing market report for Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.